It's very, 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 very expensive. But I make my own truffle oil. And you can buy truffle oil too, but because I was buying truffles, I was using everything from them. And so you make this truffle oil and this beautiful bechamel sauce with different homemade noodles. And then on top is slow roasted bison cooked in rendered duck fat. And it just melts in your mouth. And the combination of the earthiness from the bison and the creamy kind of saltiness from the bechamel cheese of the truffle mac is so incredible. And people are every time are like, this is so good. This is the best thing I've ever eaten. I'm gonna dream about this. I literally had a guy Instagram me yesterday who said, is it weird that I dream about your meat? I was like,
Oh
so those
my
two are
God.
probably my absolute favorites.
That sounds so Oh my God. Thank you so much for chatting with me. We are already to our hour already. And I just, every time we, I end the show and I'm on a roll talking with somebody, I'm like, ah, I wish I had another whole hour. But I just want to say Wopila Tonka to you for spending time. I had some asema here. For you, and if you, I'll just put it out for you. But next time I see you, I want to give you some little homemade Gatorade packs that I made. But
Awesome.
I'm so thankful to have you in my circle, and you're just such a hero to me, and I just really admire everything that you do. So thank you so much for spending time with me, Mashke, today.
Thank you so much, Moshe. I appreciate being on the show and being spending time with you. Thank you so much.
Oh,
Love you.
I love you. Doksha, thank you for listening, and we will be back next Friday. Giga Wabba Man.
From Minneapolis's historic West Bank, you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, or streaming and archived on kfai.org. It's where community has always grown.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we're going to have our friend Arvina Martin on in a few minutes here, and then also end the show with a sacred animal portion with Wendy Pilot. So we're excited today. A lot going on, and I don't want to really talk about too much until we get Arvina on, but I do want to remind everyone, too, that Native Roots Trading Post is at Dayton's downtown Minneapolis, and I just want to give a big shout out to the people that have supported that. It's been amazing down there in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, on Nicollet Mall, Nicollet, and I believe between 7th and 8th Street, downtown Minneapolis. Thank you for everyone, Pini Gigi, for everyone that's been down there and supported our little area there, and we really appreciate you. Also, I want to give a big shout out too to Wendy's Pilot's Palette out at Southdale, and she's doing very well. And again, thank you for the support. Tomorrow too, I'm going to have somebody from A Christmas in Ochape, the play that is happening until the 21st, Wednesday through Saturday at 7 p.m. So after the show, you have time to get over there. It's amazing. It's funny. And I think we'll have somebody from the cast tomorrow. Hopefully my daughter, Jaleesa McKee. So we'll see about that. And again, I just want to say a big Pini Gigi. I'm going to try and get out there another couple more times before this run is over. And it's going to be, an every other year. I'll have to find out kind of biannual thing for new native theater. So there is so much going on. Again, I don't want to talk too much about it until we get Arvina on. And we're having Arvina on a little extra this week, as she's always on Wednesdays when she can make it. But we've asked her to come on today and try and figure out what's going on here. One of the things, too, and I want to really get in with Arvina, is how are we, as people here, how are we staying healthy? How are we not in this mess? I mean, with Rob Reiner and then the shootings in Australia, and it's just, I don't remember any time like this. And I know 1968 was unbelievably brutal, but I think this 24-hour news cycle and updates and things like that have really, I don't know, really brought these things to the forefront. I can't help but see what's going on around the country, so around the world for that matter. And I'll never forget when I really realized the power of these cable news networks, and now, of course, online things is the World Series between San Francisco and Oakland A's, and I believe it was 89 or 80, it must have been 89, and how CNN was able to be there 24/7 with the big earthquake. And, you know, if you were watching the game, the lights flickered, people, the things, the stands swayed, but it wasn't like crazy. But as the time went on, you could see the devastation, the bridges collapsing, the fires in the background. And that was all because of this continuous news that's happening. And I really want to talk to Arvina about how Arvina keeps sane during these times, because we have a lot to unfold, not only nationally, but just what's happening in our native community. And I see Arvina's right there, and I'm really happy. Thank you so much, Arvina, for stopping in. I know it's not your day, but just really needed to talk to you. You're our political analyst here on Native Roots Radio, and I appreciate you and appreciate all the things that we talk about. And one of them, I don't know if we want to talk about this before we get deep what's happening, but just our mental health. I was talking a little bit about that before you came on. And welcome, and thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here and talk with you. You know, what you're saying about having to kind of think about our mental health at a time like this, like we've had 48 hours of very heavy news for people that are that watch the news and pay attention. And a lot of this is stuff that breaks through and gets through to folks that aren't people that watch the news all the time. Between the shooting in Australia, a shooting at Brown, And last night, the shooting of, or not shooting, I'm sorry, it was a knife, a stabbing of Rob Reiner and his wife, who, you know, Rob Reiner is, for people my age, probably for you as well, and, you know, he created a lot of movies that are very important and like foundational, you know, in multiple genres where they say that, oh, this is the best movie, you know, of all time, the best comedy, the best this, the best that, you know, so he's somebody that has created a lot of things that mean a lot to a lot of people. And, you know, I was just in Los Angeles and heard, like, as I was landing in Chicago, about the news that was just breaking in Los Angeles. And it was, you know, just, I mean, we are reminded again how precious life is and how quickly it can be taken away, and how events like this lead to all of us feeling less safe, and how scary that can be. I know that I've, you know, been feeling, we all know, if you listen and you've heard me, you've talked about how I tend to feel things very, like, to a great degree. And all of this, you know, in Australia, somebody coming to a service, a Hanukkah service, you know, when people are supposed to be celebrating their holidays, is terrifying for all of us, regardless of religion, but particularly for our Jewish friends. It's scary right now. And, you know, I've seen Jewish friends posting on Facebook about, well, don't go to public Hanukkah events this year. Or if you go, make sure that you are, you know, practicing situational awareness, like, you know, what's happening around you. And, you know, but it's from these terrible stories that we also get stories of heroism and stories of people that are, that care about their fellow human beings. And the man that tackled the shooter and very likely made it so that there were fewer casualties. You know, that guy, I believe his name is Ahmed Ahmed, was, you know, a hero in that instance. And we're great, you know, everybody, we should all be grateful for his humanity and his heroism and his bravery in a time that's terrifying.
Absolutely. Hey, we are here with our friend Arvina Martin, and we'd like to call her our political analyst now, and we really appreciate you coming on your off day, and we'll have you back on Wednesday. And but we need to talk more, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I don't want to go dark, but I want to talk positive too, you know, and talk a little bit about what we do to protect our souls and the good things that are happening. So I'm glad you're on here holding my hand through all this. I really appreciate you. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here. This is Robert Pilot, and we are here with Arvina Martin, our political analyst from Wisconsin, and also, you know what's going on nationally, and I really enjoy talking to you about things that are happening. You know, I just want to go positive for a second here and give a shout out to Rodney Rave. He's having a big kind of get together in Black River Falls tonight, and power to him. And I wish I could be there to support him, but I definitely, there'll be other times, Arvina, that we can definitely support our Ho-Chunk relative, our Rodney, running.
Yeah, I was sad. I also could not make it to his kickoff. you know, it's a it's super, like, I can't, clearly I'm struggling for words with how exciting it is to have, for me in particular, as a political, a person that lives in the political sphere, to have another Native congressional candidate here in Wisconsin, and he's Ho-Chunk. It's so exciting. And, you know, Rodney has come up through labor, you know, he has experience as a Ho-Chunk Nation legislator. So, you know, he's got a really good understanding of how policy works and how policy affects everyday people.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we'll have him on the show, and maybe what we can try and do is have an all Ho-Chunk show and get us three with Rodney and grill him in a good way. Ho-wah.
Yeah, that would be really exciting, you know, to get him some more, you know, airtime and really get attention brought, because there are a lot of candidates in this primary. And the one thing that I know is that every single Democratic candidate in the primary is orders of magnitude better than Derek Van Orden.
Exactly. Hey, one thing I wanted to ask you too, because I know it's very important for our lieutenant governor who's running, is to what word am I looking for, to go to the caucus. And is there a process like that in Wisconsin too? Because we want to get as many people caucusing for the lieutenant governor as opposed to the other candidates, and then bring it to the big committee and vote and get the endorsement.
Yeah, we don't have the same kind of caucus system in Wisconsin. You know, it is because we also don't have you don't declare a party affiliation when you register to vote. So, you know, anybody can vote in any primary in Wisconsin, but you have to vote in that, you have to stay within that party. You can't jump between races. So, you know, when it comes to primary season, there's a lot of people that don't identify as either Democrats or Republicans. And you've got to convince folks, you know, especially with things that are happening at all levels, you know, for, again, for me, I know I will be voting in the Democratic primary, you know, because I am a Democrat, and because we're going to have lots of races that have primary candidates. But, you know, that there are folks that want to vote that don't consider themselves members of any party. So they choose which primary to vote in. And so, you know, having a strong ballot up and down, you know, top of the ticket races, as well as, you know, more local races, you know, so people feel like they're really able to choose who represents them. It's important. And it's a little different here in Wisconsin, that you have to, in the primary, convince people to vote in that primary for you.
Yeah. It seems to me that there's no, what we always like to say is off year election. There is no such thing in the last maybe 8 years, 10 years. It's all hands on deck. And that's good for radio, but it's also nerve-wracking to get our relatives out there to vote.
Absolutely. You know, in Wisconsin, the margin of victory in the last top of the ticket races have been where Native voters can absolutely make a difference and turn the tide from, you know, red to blue, blue to red. And so, you know, our vote and our opinions and what we want out of our elected representatives is crucial to candidates. And, you know, ignoring us, it comes at your own peril. I always tell folks, you know, margin of victory, especially statewide, Native people can absolutely make the difference between winning and losing.
And I feel like a lot of our DFL friends don't understand that at times. Now, here in Minnesota, I think the 2020 election, but places like Rock the Vote Native Style, which I was part of, and also Make Voting a Tradition, registered over 9,000 Native Americans that had never voted before. And that really turned the tide for Walz to become governor, and of course Peggy Flanagan to be lieutenant governor. But that was for real. And then when Biden won the election, we had big people showing up and making that difference down in Arizona and a couple other states too, where the Native vote was very, very important. We're a small percentage, but we can really move the dial.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking about Michigan as well. They have a population, a Native population that can make or break candidates statewide, especially. And then when you get into smaller, more local races, you know, being able to turn out the Native vote, you know, especially when you are talking about areas that represent tribal communities, whether they're reservations or just other, you know, communities of Native people that live nearby, you know, those percentages go up even higher. And when you start registering folks that have never voted, who have never felt called to participate, you know, again, that can make or break and either cost somebody an election or win them an election. And it's really key, and candidates need to remember us and remember our special relationship that we have with the federal government. And we all, you know, as Native people, we know that. And sometimes we have to test candidates to make sure that they know that as well. they need to be coming out to Native communities, both reservations, urban, rural, and talk about things that are important to us, to inspire us to go out and vote and to vote for them.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of part of our job here on Native Roots Radio, Arvina, you and I, is to remind our relatives that are running for office, not just the Native ones, but sometimes we have to remind people. And I think Minnesota has kind of changed a little bit where they don't take our vote for granted. They just show up during election. I really feel like there's been some really good movement on that, and a lot of work on the 11 recognized tribes here in Minnesota with the governor, which I'm sure having a lieutenant governor was Native American, and also you know, representatives and the state senators that are Native American are really pushing the ball in that way. But we got to keep it going. I'm part of a group that works with the Met Council here in Minnesota, which is a very powerful organization that's voted in by the governor. So if we get a Republican governor, there will be different people running this. But all the things that they have their fingers in, and one of the most important things as an Indigenous person here is I have to remind them to have their workforce learn what sovereignty is. And I know you talk a lot about that in your talks, and when people hire you to come talk to their groups, it's so important, and it's not taught.
Absolutely. Well, and it's supposed to be taught. You know, in Wisconsin, we have Act 30, which requires schools to teach about Native history in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, there's no teeth to it. So, you know, your mileage may vary in terms of what you learned in school about Wisconsin's tribal populations and the history of those tribes and communities in Wisconsin. So, you know, I always, like, when I do my presentation, I like to break it down because there are really two parts of making sure that you are working with Indian country well. And the first part is to understand what tribal sovereignty is, to understand that treaties are a law of the land and not just something cute that they did. And, like, it's not like a, you know, a participation trophy or something. Yeah. These have the force of law, and they, you know, assure rights. They do not give rights. Those treaties are put in place to protect already existing rights that we as Native people have had. And, you know, never talking about something like traditional foraging, hunting, gathering, fishing as a special right. It's not special. It's something that we have always had as from time immemorial and continue because our leaders previously thought to make sure that we did that. So we've got to talk about that side and how to work with tribes as peer governments. But we also have to talk about how to engage Native people on the grassroots level and how that's different from each community, you know, each reservation, and, you know, you could go to Chakichi and talk to folks different than you would in, you know, Shawano. It's important that our candidates know this.
Programming on KFAI is sponsored by Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County's Energy Assistance Program. The Energy Assistance Program helps low-income households pay a portion of their energy bills. You only need 1 month of income verification and a copy of your energy bill when you submit your application. Please make sure you have this documentation as it will help expedite your application processing. In addition to energy assistance, we also offer referrals to our CAPRW Home Weatherization Program. Ramsey and Washington County residents may call 651-645-6470 or visit the website at caprw.org for more information and to apply online.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and we are here with our friend Arvina Martin. And I really appreciate you coming on, Arvina, for an extra day here this week. And I wanted you to let people know how to get a hold of you, because I think it's really important. And a lot of people ask, you know, who can I have come in? Who can I hire to have come in and talk to my group of people, a lot of allies out there that listen to the show, that are listen to civic media in Wisconsin, and also AM 950 here in Minnesota. Give your email or how people can get a hold of you and do a nice talk, because I've seen your talk before, and you just gave us a nice little preview of that last segment.
Yeah, you can, you know, you can always find me on LinkedIn, look up my name, and you can also email me at arvina.martin@gmail.com, and I will do my best to get back to you as soon as I can. And, you know, for any allies out there, it's important to do the background work and not expect the group that you're working with to do the work for you. So if you are reaching out to a tribal community, you know, don't go in there expecting they are going to educate you. You do your research beforehand, make connections if possible, and have those people that you meet in those communities kind of serve as, like, you know, your touch point, and they will be the ones who can let you know if the way that you are approaching a community is appropriate or not, you know. And in order to do that, you need to be providing content or doing work that somehow will benefit that particular community, and then letting them know that it's happening. Ideally, you'd want to reach out before you started doing that work, but, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen.
Well, what's interesting too, and remember the phenomena that kind of, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, the phenomena of land acknowledgments, and how we kind of, as a community, have got sick of doing those, because really the land, we know where we're from. It's the land acknowledgement is basically something that maybe the organization needs to do and learn, not hire somebody or ask somebody to come in and read a piece of paper.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people that find land acknowledgments particularly, like, cloying or performative. And, you know, when people ask me about them, I always tell them what their purpose, what do they want to achieve about this by doing a land acknowledgement. You know, it should be a first step, not a final product. You know, you should be thinking about a land acknowledgement and thinking about the people who have been stewarding the land where you are living or doing your work, you know, from time immemorial, you know, do you have something that you can do, you know, a service that you provide, a product that you provide, that can be, you know, can you somehow offer that to that particular community, and make sure that that relationship between your organization and a tribe or multiple tribes are, you know, that you're not just saying, hey, you were here, we acknowledge that, but saying you were here, and because of this, you know, this organization for youth arts is promising to work with the nation, you know, a particular tribe, and commit to offering scholarships for, or free programming, or you know, for the youth of that community. So, you know, really think what you want to get out of it and what you are willing to put into it in order to get there, because it has to be both ways.
No, that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought that up in a little more concise way than I rambled on. That's perfect. One of the things I got to tell you this too, Arvina, is that, you know, with my work and then being on committees and nonprofits and state things, I've gotten like the University of Minnesota and the Met Council to mention Ho-Chunk in their land acknowledgement here in Minnesota. So,
Yeah, I love that. I love that. The more people that know about us, the better, and how amazing we are as Ho-Chunk people.
Yes, and humble. They can always tell when they listen to my show. I'm proud of my humility, and I like to talk about it in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I joke about it, but you know, we do come from a community that values humility. But you know, we also like to tease. So
yeah, definitely. And you know, if you're being teased, that means you're liked, and that's always a good feeling, because I seem to get teased a lot when I go down to Black River Falls and see see people, which is fine and dandy, which is cool. I you know, we got a couple more minutes here, and again, I really appreciate you coming in. What would you like to talk about? Because you know, I think it's really important to get the pulse of what other people are thinking. And I'm sometimes in a big silo here in the Twin Cities, or when I'm in New York. So what's going on in Wisconsin that you'd like to talk about? I know one of the things that I just want to mention is that Chief Sitting Bull was killed on this day. We have a lot of Lakota Dakotas that listen to the show, and of course, Minnesota. And that was back in December 15th, 1890. And they were tried to arrest him, and he was murdered. And we just wanted to pay homage to him real quick today.
Yes, you know, an incredible leader, and someone who unfortunately oftentimes just gets reduced to a particular image, you know, a photograph, and that's what people think. And he was a whole person, and he was a leader that you know, worked tirelessly, you know, in his way to protect his people and his community. And we are all grateful for him and everything that he did, which is too numerous to get into right now. I mean, he gave everything. So, but I actually was going to mention how I spent last week at in Los Angeles for the DNC convention. And I have to say, one of the highlights, well, probably the highlight for me, was the Native American caucus meeting. Our chair of the caucus, Clara Pratt, who is Navajo from Arizona, also running for Arizona Water Commissioner statewide. So we wish her luck. And if you are hearing us from Arizona, somehow vote for Clara. But she organized an amazing panel that, I mean, if a panel can have you at the edge of my seat, this one did. They had leaders from the California Native community, the head of California Native Vote, the head of the California American Indian Chamber of Commerce, the head of the organization that serves Native people that live in the Los Angeles area, you know, a huge center of population due to relocation, and also one of the co-founders of Rock the Vote, which, as you know, an ex-ennial Oregon Trail generation / elder millennial, late baby Gen Xer, Rock the Boat was really, really like pivotal in my life, and seeing people talk about politics to young people in a way that was relevant to my experiences, things that I was going to. So that was really awesome. And you know, you talk about silos and everything, and it was a really great opportunity to hear from these leaders about ways that they have worked to improve access for Native people to various systems, to economic growth and prosperity. I particularly enjoyed the presentation that the head of the California Native Vote Project did about doing research and helping build a voter file that actually, you know, is of Native people. You know, it's hard to determine who is Native when going into voter files, and having that information available, especially to candidates and campaigns, allows people to understand our impact and how big we are as a voting piece of the electorate, and that helps them, you know, see our importance, why they need to be talking to us and caring about issues that are important to us, so that, and that they need to be important to them as candidates as well. And you know, it's really hard, it's hard work, like incredibly hard work to do, and it was really inspiring and really, really amazing to see that they were able to put in the work to do it.
Well, I'm really glad I asked you about that. That's awesome. And one of the things I wanted to mention too, that's funny that you mentioned California or Los Angeles, is like, I think it was today or yesterday was the first day that the Trump's army is no longer in Los Angeles.
Hooray. It's no longer an occupied city in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I don't know, did you see any of that when you were down there? Because that just kind of came up on my feed. I don't know what day they left, but that was Newsom put that out on his social media.
I didn't. I you know, when it's like when you go to conferences and you don't get to do super tons of a lot of things to do, like in the city, because you're going to all the meetings and everything. But I did happen to walk by Gavin Newsom. He's,
well,
yeah, he has very nice hair. You know, his haircut is very nice. Also, we got to hear
maybe
from
he's part Native with that hair, huh?
Maybe, yeah. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, like I said, you know, hung out mostly by the hotel just because of so much that was happening that we had to participate in. So I need to go back to experience Los Angeles for real.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, one more time, we only got a minute left here, and I really, really appreciate you coming in on your off day and talking me down, in a good way, and talk about positive things like you have in the show. Let our people know again how they can get a hold of you for speaking engagements, or even, you know, you do a lot of political work, so maybe they can work it out with you in a good way.
Yeah, reach out to me on LinkedIn, Arvina Martin. That will probably be the most direct and like non-losable way for me to get your message.
Right on. Thank you so much, Arvina. And we'll see you Wednesday. We're working you again. So we'll see you Wednesday, and I appreciate you coming on today and helping me out.
Yeah, I look forward to my overtime pay on Wednesday.
That's right. All right. There'll be a little something extra in your stocking this year, but I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And we'll be right back.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator. And you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We got a little technical difficulty here with Frankie, but he'll be joining us in a few minutes here, I hope. And there's so much going on, and I don't want to even speak for what Frankie does, so I'm going to wait for him to get back on and talk about what he has. But there's you can look him up, Google him, Frankie Jackson Prairie Island. There's Frankie is the THPO of Prairie Island, and he does a lot of things, and I was able to see some of the work that he does. And of course, he doesn't do it alone, but down in Prairie Island, where I was able to visit some burial grounds that Prairie Island bought again, the land. And it's really, really interesting. Some of the burial grounds were dug up, which is just amazing that people did that, and dug up artifacts and dug up bodies. And so in 2025, hopefully people are smart enough to to talk to somebody like Frankie before things happen. And so that's pretty interesting. And, I can't wait. You know, they find things like, a pipe, you know, things like that in these burial grounds, and they're getting brought back, hopefully, and that'll be an awesome, awesome thing. You know, we need to reclaim our past, and that's pretty much, not pretty much, but that's what they're doing down there, Prairie Island. And his friend working too, Noah White, works with him, and so those are the things. And it looks like we got Frankie on here. Frankie, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay, perfect. Hey. Perfect. I was trying to log in with my laptop. For some reason, it wouldn't let me, so I'm on my cell phone now.
Well, you sound good, and you look good, and I've been just mumbling through this first part of the show here, but you're the expert, and Frankie, tell us a little bit of what you do, and so I can ask you some questions. But I really believe what you do is really great work, and I know Noah works with you and other people work with you, and I'm just amazed. Do you mind introducing yourself and tell people what you do?
Yeah, certainly, Robert. Well, first of all, thanks for having me and inviting me on just to talk a little bit about what we do out of our office. So my name is Frankie Jackson. I'm an enrolled member of the Sistine-Wahpeton Dakota Oyate. I reside here in Minnesota, and I'm the compliance officer for the Prairie Island Tribal Historic Preservation Office. I'm a cultural resource specialist, and I've been in cultural resource management coming up on 30 years. And I've been in my current position with Prairie Island coming up on 10 years. So this summer will mark my 10-year mark working for Prairie Island.
That's amazing, and maybe you can tell people what's your day like. I mean, people get a hold of you. I know years past, if there's any kind of road digging or anything, if they find something, they contact you. And that's not always been the case, but it seems like things like that are happening in a good way now.
You know, a large part of what we do, we're a regulatory office. And so a large part of what we have to do is work with federal and state and oftentimes land managing agencies to help enforce different federal and state statutes around historic and cultural preservation. One of the biggest ones being Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. That's probably the biggest, responsibility that keeps us busy the most is responding to Section 106 notifications from various agencies when it comes to projects. And what this does is it forces federal agencies to take into consideration the impact that their project might have on known archaeological and historic resources. And so as you can imagine, we stay really, really busy with just our review of these projects. So for instance, before any major highway development project goes through, It'd typically be our office working with the state archaeologists and other stakeholders to ensure that we've identified all of the cultural or archaeological resources within the potential area, and then work on ways to help mitigate or avoid those potential impacts to cultural resources.
So is a higher percentage or a good percentage of these people compliant, or every once in a while something gets slipped through where they don't reach out to somebody like you? I mean, you don't have to name names, but is it hit or miss? Because I know one of the things that we talk about where we know each other and what we talk a lot about is, you know, people don't know what sovereignty is. They weren't taught these things in school. So tell me that everyone's compliant or people aren't, or how is that working for you? It makes your job hard.
Robert, I've been at the table long enough that I can give you kind of a snapshot from my point of view. So let's just take a look at what consultation looked like maybe 10 years ago for tribes in Minnesota, specifically around historic and cultural preservation. There was very, very little representation, and there was very, very little focus from federal and state agencies to engage tribes on that level. We're seeing a big shift now, and I'm happy to see this. I'm at the tail end of my career, but I'm really, really pleased to see this, specifically here in Minnesota. And I think this goes back to like the governor's call out, for meaningful engagement, with his executive order. And with his support of staffing within federal and state agencies, right? So we have more and more tribal liaisons positions within these federal and state agencies. And what I think that has done is help bridge that gap in communication. And so you're seeing more and more land managing agencies fall in line with compliance to not only this, the federal regulations, but to state regulations as well. Now, that's not to say that things don't fall through the cracks. It's not to say that things don't happen. Oftentimes, what we are faced with are dealing with situations that we call inadvertent discoveries. And so, say somebody's building out, extending their garage at their lakefront property, and they hit a burial mound, or they hit a cultural resource like that. Then we get called in, and then we have to help put together mitigation plans, not only for the homeowner, but working with other state agencies such as Minnesota Indian Affairs, who helps shoulder the responsibility of carrying out the Minnesota state burial law. My long answer to that is yes, things are improving, Robert. Things are improving. And I want to give credit to our governor for helping fill some of those gaps. And I want to just give credit where credit is due, because we have a lot of tribal liaisons who are doing really good work to help bridge those gaps in communication. So,
yeah, that's really good news. One of the questions I want to ask you, too, which is interesting. We know this is Lakota, Dakota land here in the state of Minnesota. But do you ever get called in and it might be another tribal burial, or does that ever happen?
Yeah, so it happens a lot. And here's how I like to address that, Robert, because when we look at land occupation from the westernized point of view, it always has to be what dominant tribe is in that area, right? That's kind of like the Washichu narrative, right? Yeah. So it's really important for us as tribal people, as Dakota people specifically, to acknowledge everybody who shared this landscape with us, both before us and while we are standing on this landscape as well. And so many, many, many tribal nations have creation stories, or stories that bring them to and from the land of Minnesota. I think it's important for all of us to help honor that. And I think it's important for us to be as inclusive as we can when we go forward. We weren't the only mound builders here. There were other mound builders. There were the Ho-Chunk. There were the Iowa. There were other folks that helped occupy and leave their footprint on the geography here in Minnesota. So there are often times when we're standing on a site and we're trying to interpret a site, and I might have to call in, Bill Quackenbush from Ho-Chunk. To help give us a better understanding of what we're looking at here. Or, you know, I might have to call up our partners down at the Iowa tribe. You know, we just lost one of our great leaders from the Iowa tribe, the THPO, who passed away this last this last year. But we often rely on each other for this. And we get phone calls from other tribes too, right? That help us to help us better understand not only archaeological and cultural sites out in the field, but also cultural material. You know, so there's often times when other tribes are doing reviews of collections, or we're doing reviews of collections, and we're seeing material that's not specifically Dakota. And then, you know, we lean hard and we rely on the expertise and the traditional knowledge and subject matter experts from other tribes to help us glean that knowledge. So,
wow. Hey, we're here with Frankie Jackson, and there's some really interesting things. We got to take a quick break here. Frankie, I want to talk a little bit about when we went down to Prairie Island and saw those mounds, if you don't mind. Think about that almost every day. It's just amazing work you're doing, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and then how you became a compliance officer too. I'd like to know that. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back. Ho-wah.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Shrimp Nose at the 7th Street Entry Friday, December 26th. Experimental electronic artist Shrimp Nose is back with his latest release, The World Pushed Against You. This new album shows that Shrimp Nose is moving beyond the down-tempo lo-fi genre and moving into new worlds and new sounds. Opening the show are Student One, Blood Smoke Body, Talia Knight, and FIP B2B Wonderland. More information about Shrimp Nose at the 7th Street Entry is available at first-avenue.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Frankie Jackson, Tippo of Prairie Island tribe here in Minnesota. And I just think your work is so interesting. Can you tell me how you got started in this?
Yeah, so mine takes me all the way back to right around 1998-99 when my tribe, I was recruited. I was working for my tribe's environmental office when I had an opportunity through our planning office to help put together the grant application for the Tribal Historic Preservation Office for my tribe, for Siston. And so during that case, it was kind of a real learning experience. But through that process, I was able to help successfully land that grant for my tribe. And it sent me down this wonderful career path for the last 28 years in the field of historic and cultural preservation, which took me back to school to get a degree that I pursued at the University of Morris. And then it took me on this wonderful career of working with a lot of tribes in our region to address historic and cultural preservation needs. One of the biggest, I guess, rewards or accomplishments I think that I helped achieve throughout my career is there was a 10-year period. Right now, tribal historic preservation, that's a pretty well-known term. But back around 97, There weren't that many THPOs out there. So during the course of a 10-year period, me and my counterpart, Katie Ferris, who was an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewas, he passed away a couple of years ago. But Katie Ferris and I, we made it a strategic point to help bring other tribes into the world of this THPO. And so over a 10-year period, we helped write the grant application for 12 different tribes in our region. Wow, we helped establish amazing. 12 different tribal historic preservation offices in our region. That's been one of my biggest accomplishments. All of those offices are still up and running, doing wonderful things, offering some wonderful career employment, just doing some wonderful, wonderful things within their respective communities. That's kind of how I got my feet wet and introduced into the world of historic and cultural preservation.
A big part of
what we do, Robert, and you got to see a little bit of this. A big part of our responsibility down at Prairie Island, you know, Noah White is the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, and I work closely with him and others in our department to fulfill our responsibility when it comes to burial mound management. When we talk about, you know, just the Red Wing area of Minnesota, which is the southeast portion of Minnesota alone, there were close to 5,000 documented burial mounds in that area alone. Many of those burial mounds have been destroyed in the name of development and science. What small fragments of burial mounds exist, we take protecting those burial mounds very, very serious. I want to give my props to the Prairie Island Indian community too, because they really exemplified this. They've gone one step further, and I'll share a story with you which really kind of exemplifies the true meaning of rematriation. And this is a story of how the Prairie Island Indian community purchased 156 acres along the Cannon River for the sole purpose of protecting a burial mound complex that exists there on the second terrace. There's over 80 burial mounds within this wooded area on the second terrace. More importantly, the tribe purchased this property so it could address a large issue, a huge issue that we have here in Minnesota. What do we do with our relatives that have been disturbed from burial mounds here in Minnesota? A lot of Minnesotans may not know this, but we have over 500 relatives in holding at Hamline University, and all of those, or a majority of those relatives, have come from burial mounds in Minnesota. And one of the biggest obstacles to addressing this issue, Robert, has been land. Where are we gonna reinter our relatives? If we cannot reinter them directly back into the burial mound that they came out of, if we can't reinter them closest to that burial mound, then where are we gonna do that? This problem has primarily been one that the Dakota tribes have had to shoulder, because, you know, we are mound builders and these are our relatives. When you're looking at small land-based tribes, like the Dakota tribes here in Minnesota, setting aside land specifically for repatriation might not take priority, right? We have healthcare issues, we have housing issues, we have all of these other things. So again, I want to finish just giving my props to the Prairie Island Indian community for setting aside over 40 acres on the top terrace for the sole purpose of, they designated as a reburial ground, repatriation grounds. And what that's allowed us to do is to start bringing back and reinterring our relatives that are in holding right now in the state repository. And so, for instance, this last summer, our office was able to help bring back 59 relatives that came from burial mounds in the southeast portion of Minnesota, many of them from the Red Wing area. Wow. Some of them were taken, like I said, from inadvertent discoveries, and some of them were targeted excavations from some of the universities and higher places of institutions here in Minnesota, such as the University of Minnesota. We were able to help bring back 59 relatives to this resting spot, this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful spot that overlooks the Cannon River. And five burial mounds were reconstructed where these relatives were placed back in these burial mounds, along with over 3,000 funerary objects.
Wow.
That reburial ceremony took place this last spring. Two summers ago at the very same location, the tribe.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.